Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 51 for March 7th, 2008, in the mix. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audiblepodcasts.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. We apologize. We're a little bit late because Paul was in Las Vegas for Mix 08. He's now back, and so a day late, but not a dollar short because he won big in Vegas at the tables. Mr. Paul Thurrott.
I can't say I've never gambled, but I never gamble.
You know, it's funny because all of us as geeks go to Vegas more often than some because that's where all the trade shows are. And most of the geeks I talk to do not gamble. Probably because they understand odds and statistics.
Although I will tell you, actually, an excellent story. Years ago, when Windows Me was sort of the up-and-coming new version of Windows that was coming down the pike, so whatever year that might have been, 99, you know, 2000, something like that, I was in Vegas for Comdex, and I was hanging out with those guys in the Hyatt, right, which is next door to where the convention always was.
Yeah.
Over by the Star Trek Experience. And these guys had this sort of gambling theory that if you were going to play roulette, if you always bet on one color, you would be right 50% of the time.
True.
So that assuming you had an unlimited amount of money, you could always win at roulette if you wanted to.
Wait a minute. You know, you only win half the time.
I know, but so anyway,
they were a little confused. See, this is what I'm saying. Well, geeks understand this.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, this is how Windows Me came to be, I'm sure. So, but what was amazing, I'm going to get the number a little bit off. I don't remember exactly, but I want to say they were betting on black and red turned up while I was standing there 24 times in a row. And by the time it was over, a crowd had, you know, grown around this thing to watch this. It was insane. And the guy who was running the, you know, I guess the guy who'd come over who was sort of overseeing things said he had only seen it go higher than that one other time, maybe 30 times in a row, something like that. But when they walked away from the table, I said, I was like, are you crazy? You can't walk away. You have to
keep going.
Until you win once, you know, but they walked away. I think it was 24 times in a row. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty discouraging. That's a little sign from the heavens.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. They didn't gamble again either. I bet you.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, you were at Mix 08 in Vegas, and we will talk about that in a little bit, but there's some other things. Before there was Mix 08, you were at the Windows 2008 server launch, right?
Yes. Yeah, right. So it seems like it was 12 years ago.
Traveling a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, the trip I didn't get sick on about a week and a half ago, I guess, a week ago, I was in Los Angeles for the Windows server launch, and, you know, that was actually kind of a nice event. They had a good party. It was really odd because they had the keynote at the Nokia Theater, which is beautiful, and the presentation was spectacular. It was some crazy widescreen, three-dimensional, you know, I don't know, it was really neat. It's hard to describe, and it certainly doesn't translate well, even to photos, but absolutely fascinating looking. And then we all moved over to the Los Angeles Convention Center, which is, of course, where Microsoft has a lot of their big trade shows. And it was really odd to go there just for one day and kind of have a couple of sessions, have a couple of meetings, and then leave. And I felt like I was cutting out of town early because usually when I go to the Los Angeles Convention Center, I'm there for a week, you know, for PDC or something like that.
Right.
And that was really interesting. But, you know, L.A. was beautiful. It was great.
Nice weather after the snows of Dedham.
Well, yeah, actually, I was chased out of town on a snowstorm and and actually, the day I flew home, now that I'm my memory is now coming back. home, it was, you know, well, it's going to take a couple of weeks for me to recover from this. But the day I flew home, it was 75 degrees in Los Angeles. And when I arrived in Boston, it was, I think, 5 degrees and it was negative 17 with the wind chill.
Oh,
are you kidding me? Like, yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Awesome.
So, so Server 2008, we've talked about it before. Is there anything new to say now that it's launched?
No, I mean, I think the big deal now is that it's finally out. You know, we're still waiting on SQL Server 2008, which is also part of that launch wave. And there's the Hyper-V portion of Windows Server 2008, which is now only in beta, which will ship later this year, which I think is a big deal. And that's the virtualization piece. Mm-hmm. And that's something maybe we can look at further down the road. Maybe we'll even get someone on here to talk about it. Because I think that's a big change for Windows Server and something that's going to have far-reaching, you know, implications.
They're encouraging people to run in virtual mode even when they're serving?
Yes. Mm. Yeah, and the deal with this is, you know, for Microsoft at least, this is the first time they've had a hypervisor-based virtualization solution, which is basically just a much closer to the metal, so to speak.
Right. It's using the hardware capabilities of the chip.
Better performance.
Yeah.
It's not running on top of the, you know, it's not an application running on top of an OS with virtual machines on top of all that. Right. It's a closer to the metal type solution. So anyway, that looks interesting. So it's all good stuff. You know, it's again, it feels like it happened so long ago. I'm having a hard time even remembering it. I'll have to start flipping through photos or something. But
yeah,
it was a good trip.
Well, good.
I didn't get, so it was nice.
Well, then you went to Las Vegas.
And I went to Vegas. Yeah.
There was your mistake. Therein lied your tale. Although nonstop from Vegas, hearing some pretty amazing stuff. Now it was one of those things where you know, Microsoft's in Vegas talking about Mix 08, Apple's in Cupertino on Thursday. I don't know if they timed this intentionally, announcing its iPhone SDK and iPhone 2.0. Where was the attention? Where was your attention?
Oh man, it was all over the map, and that was the hardest day I've had this year. Was that it was Thursday, and what had happened was, you know, I arrived on Tuesday, and we had some event stuff on Wednesday, you know, including the first keynote and so forth. They had sessions that day and everything, and then a party that night. But Thursday was the Ballmer keynote, which was excellent. He was up there with Guy Kawasaki. If you haven't seen it, I really recommend going to the Mix website. I believe it's you can find it Microsoft.com/Mix, I'm sure, but there'll be a video of Steve Ballmer.
It sounded pretty amazing. I've heard numerous quotes from it. Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious.
Now, some people I talked to said that the guy's hijinks were a little much.
It was a little much. But the thing I really appreciated about what happened was, A, Ballmer is not afraid of answering questions. No. And he answers them honestly.
Yeah.
And, you know, Guy Kawasaki, if you know, for those who aren't aware, was the original Apple evangelist. He kind of invented the evangelism, you know, technology evangelism. He did the evangelism for the first Macintosh. He wrote the book, The Macintosh Way, among other books. Fascinating figure to me. I've always been really interested in Guy Kawasaki. But he's an Apple guy. Clearly an Apple guy.
Yeah.
And he really, you know, went after Ballmer and tried to dig at him a little bit and went after the Apple versus Microsoft stuff. And Ballmer just responded, I thought, in a beautiful fashion, including some great stuff about the MacBook Air that, you know, Kawasaki had brought up on stage with him. And I just thought, you know, he answered the Vista stuff. You know, Guy Kawasaki had said something like, well, you know, what's the deal with Vista? And he said, what do you mean? What's the deal? You mean with the second best selling operating system in OS history? You know,
good answer.
Second only to XP. He's like, I don't know. He says, well, and then Guy Kawasaki said, well, yeah, but you know, that's only because people don't have a choice. He says, really? He goes, what do you got there? He goes, is this thing running Windows Vista? And it was a MacBook, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, no, it isn't. So I guess you have a choice.
Wow. And good for him.
He said, the problem is, he goes, you made the wrong choice.
Whoa.
No, but it was beautiful because that's exactly the way it should be defended.
I agree.
I thought it was great. So it's a fun exchange. It gets a little crazy. Some buddies of mine were able to ask a question and got Ballmer to do the famous monkey boy chant. So he did the web developer version of that, which was great. You know, that was a good time. So, but for me personally, unfortunately, I woke up that day. I was really feverish, a pounding headache, and I couldn't get online from my hotel room. I had really bad connection problems all week. So, you know, I was going to call and say, look, I can't do my meetings today. I'm a mess. But I ended up going over to the press room. So I walked in and I said, look, I'm really sick. I can't, I really shouldn't be around people today. And I kind of went and I sat over in the corner. And so I ended up staying there for quite some time. I just made sure no one got too close to me. But I watched the Ballmer's keynote from the press room because they telecasted it into the room on a TV. And then I followed the iPhone 2.0 software stuff via live blogging, which was horrible, by the way. And
from your hotel room?
No, from the same place.
Oh, from the press room. Okay.
Yeah. I did it all from the corner of the room, you know, and I posted a couple things. And then I went back and
you could have stayed home.
Yeah, the rest of my day was like the beginning of Apocalypse Now when Martin Sheen is, you know, in the bed in the beginning. Yeah. It was awful. So
I got. Yeah.
Yeah. And finally the fever broke at, you know, 9 o'clock at night. But the next morning, a friend of mine sent me a link where you could actually download, not just, you know, see it on the web, but download the video of the iPhone event.
Yeah.
So I downloaded
That's
it to
kind
my
of
heart.
One of the neat things is you can now watch that. You can watch the Mix 08 speeches, Ray Ozzie's speech, which I thought was very important.
It's neat. So I was able to watch this on the plane ride going home and write a story about it, which I did. So I ended up getting a lot done, but, you know, it was sort of a, it was a lot. Yeah.
So to tell us about Mix 08. This was Microsoft's attempt to say we're in the web app business, basically. Yes.
Yeah. So this is the third Mix event they've done in a row. I somehow avoided going to the previous two. This year, I've basically resolved that, you know, if there's even a remote chance that this of whatever event has anything to do with the next version of Windows, I'm going to be a part of this. So I figured Internet Explorer 8 would be a big part of this, and it was. So I should go to Mix. And actually, you know, it's a small show. It was at the Venetian, way in the back of the Venetian, but whatever. And it was a fantastic show, I have to say, and a lot of good information. And I was actually reminded of a conversation that you and I had, I think, on the podcast, talking about how, you know, if life had gone any differently, how maybe the developer route would have been kind of interesting. And, you know, if we could just focus on one thing, that would be kind of an interesting way to go. And, and going to a real developer-oriented show like Mix is, it sort of rekindles those thoughts. This stuff is still very interesting to me, and I like talking about this stuff, and I like, you know, finding out what's going on and so forth.
Well, this is the stuff that matters. This is the stuff under the hood, and this is where the expression of the stuff that we enjoy using begins, is with the developers.
Yeah, and when I think about, you know, computing, and I actually wrote this in my iPhone article, I don't know that I'd ever summarized it this way, but I sort of think of computing going forward as having sort of four, you know, core segments, right? There's the traditional desktop and server like we think of computing today, but then the rest of it is like, you know, software plus services, you know, the stuff that bridges that divide between a PC and the cloud. There's like true cloud computing. And then there's mobile computing. And, you know, Mix really hit on all of that stuff, as incidentally does the iPhone. But it was really interesting to me. So there were things like Silverlight, which, you know, in its first incarnation, which is really just about delivering high quality video. Not particularly interesting to me personally, because I don't really have a need.
Is it kind of like another Flash?
It is, but the next version, Silverlight 2, which is what they were talking about the show, the version that's coming out this year that's in beta now, is really a hosted version of .NET. So all those millions of people who know that, you know, how to program within the .NET environment, the .NET framework, can take those skills. And by the way, we're talking about everything that from, you know, the Windows Presentation Foundation style, you know, vector graphics and all the effects and everything. I mean, this is a full web application development environment.
I saw a little bit of it in action with the Hard Rock demo, the memorabilia.hardrock.com.
Absolutely fantastic. And also the NBC Olympics site that will be coming up this summer when the Olympics hit is all Silverlight, and it is going to be unbelievable. They did an insane demonstration of this thing. It is just epic.
Now, how will people be using it? Will it come with IE8? Will it be a Windows update? Is it something you have to download?
Well, it's a plugin. So it's a cross-platform, cross-browser plugin. It's really small. I want to say that the current version is only a couple of megabytes, and 2.0 might be 4 megabytes or something. It's a pretty small installation. So it's like Flash in that sense. It's not IE only, right? Which is, you know, after a while, we're not going to have to keep making these comments because Microsoft is doing this more and more and more, where they're not just doing these advances for their own products, right? They're actually pushing this stuff out to other places. And it works in Firefox. It works in Safari. It works on the Mac. It works in Linux. It works on the PC. So it's, of course, Internet Explorer as well on the PC. So,
but doesn't require it. And that's important.
Yeah,
this is it. I get the sense that maybe this is all about Microsoft. You mentioned those four different forms of computing is turning away from the desktop and turning more toward the cloud and middleware as well.
Well, they can't, obviously, they can't turn away from it completely, right? I mean,
well, it's their bread and butter right now, but is it going to be?
They make, I'm sure, more is coming from that one segment, but they also recognize that the world is changing, right? I think the Yahoo bid that they made is a recognition of that fact. I think all the stuff they announced at Mix is a recognition of that fact. You know, they were very protectionist of their core markets in the past. And I think now they've finally seen the light and they're starting to open this stuff up and really go nuts. So, I mean, they've done things like, you know, they're putting Silverlight on Nokia phones. You know, it's interesting. I mean, even licensing exchange, you know, ActiveSync to Apple for the iPhone is an example of, you know, just getting that stuff out there. Because ultimately for Microsoft, I'm sure they'd love to make the pure play where it was, you know, Microsoft every step along the way. Yeah. But, you know, if you have to use an iPhone, at least we can get you on the Exchange license, you know.
Right. Right.
Why not? By the way, obviously the big thing at Mix in some ways was Internet Explorer 8, the first beta. I think the big mistake they made with it was not calling it a developer preview, because that, of course, is what it is. And a lot of people who see this initial version are thinking, I don't understand what the big deal is. It looks just like IE7, but that's because they haven't changed the UI. They're going to do that in the future. The UI that you see there is not the final UI. And there'll be more end-user features in future betas as well. The other thing that no one has really caught on to, and I'm really kind of amazed by this, is that there's a feature in there called Activities, which are these little buttons that pop up when you click on certain information in websites. Those are basically smart tags, which Microsoft had removed from, I think it was the beta of IE7, if I'm not mistaken. They were trying to put smart tags in an earlier version.
What do they do?
Well, it's the type of thing where if you highlight an address and right-click, one of the activities could be a Google map or a Yahoo map that will lead you to that location. You know, or if it's a phone number, you could select it and right-click it, and it will provide with a way to make over that kind of thing. It's just it's sort of intelligently scanning the page, and based on the activities that you have set or okay, it will give you different choices, and obviously depending on what the information is that you've selected, it will provide you with different options. There are things like translators, so if you can select a block of text that's in a foreign language, it will translate it to English for you, that sort of stuff.
I'm not sure I understand. From the point of view of the user, it's no different than a hyperlink, really.
Well, no. I mean, it is different because it's not something that the web page has to have built into it. The intelligence for this is coming from the browser, not from the web server. Not from the guy.
So I don't have to explicitly put this location, put a link to a map. The browser says, "Oh, it's a location. Right. Maybe you'd like a link." Right. I get it.
Browser's doing it.
So the browser's smart about the content it's displaying. And gives you appropriate context-sensitive actions.
Right. Now, the only reason they introduced this feature at this time, again, you got to remember this is a developer-oriented release, is they want developers to create activities that they can, you know, that are essentially plugins for the browser. So they put out a bunch of sample activities so they can say, these are the types of things we think would be useful to people. Now, on the flip side, there's something, there's another feature of the browser, which is sort of like what you were talking about. You know, in other words, something that a web developer would have to build into the site, right? And these things, you would have to put a meta tag, you know, some sort of a small bit of HTML in there. And I think it's called a web slice. And basically what it allows you to do is save, it's basically a favorite, but for a small portion of the page.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so if I'm trying to think of an obvious example.
Well, it happens all the time where you just want a bit of the page.
The weather.
Right. So what happens when you use that web slice? Does it doesn't pull up the whole
page? It
actually
comes down from the toolbar, and you just get that little part of it. It doesn't take up the whole window. So if you want to check the weather real quick, you click on it, it pops down and shows you what the forecast is or whatever that kind of
thing. Now, these things aren't standards-based, though, so... It's one thing when the browser does something, because then the browser just does something and other browsers don't. But if you design a page to take advantage of some features that are IE specific, that's non-standards based. Now, they've been saying IE is much more standards based.
Well, as far as the website rendering goes, that was the big announcement from before the show, is that by default now, Internet Explorer 8 will ship with standards-based rendering as the default. So in other words, it should render pages similarly to, you know, Firefox and Safari, which are generally seen to be, you know, pretty good with standards.
Yeah.
There are two other modes, you know, IE7 mode, where we'll render like IE7 does. And then there's a Quarks mode, which is the old-fashioned IE, you know, backwards compatibility mode. Originally, they were going to ship it so that it would render an IE7 mode by default.
So that's not, that's a good change. That's a good change. It is a good change. Positive. Yeah.
Now, as far as the, you know, the activities and the web slice stuff, yeah, those, so those are not standards.
They're proprietary extensions.
Windows specific. And to be fair, I could be, you know, knowing the way Microsoft is now, they could very well be opening this stuff up so that other people can implement this as well.
Right.
You know, we should at least acknowledge that they've been, you know, very upfront about this stuff lately with interoperability concerns.
No
and
kidding.
So forth.
So, yeah, no, it's a changed company in that regard.
Yeah, it would surprise me.
Do you think that what you saw at Mix08 was a company redefining itself or a company trying to extend itself? In other words, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Is looking forward, obviously, to the future. How much of it is a new focus, and how much of it is just, you know, we want to turn our eyes to an even broader scope?
Well, I think this is a logical extension of the business. You know, actually, that
where
was
they
one
need
of the,
to go right.
I mean, Guy Kawasaki had made a comment. He said, you know, he goes, 20 years ago, I really felt like I understood you guys. We had the OS wars. You know, it was Apple versus Microsoft. We all made software. It all made sense to me because it's now, you know, my kids look at you and they think you're this cool company that makes Xboxes and Zunes, and they don't understand any of the history or the other stuff that you do. They have no understanding at all of the enterprise stuff that Microsoft does. But, you know, Microsoft is all over the map. They're a humongous company.
65,000 employees, I just found out.
Yeah, I think the quote he said was, you know, we have $60 billion in revenue a year. I mean, it's a big company.
Yeah.
So...
That's Exxon.
Yeah, it's good and bad. I mean, you know, obviously part of the capitalist society we live in, you know, you have to keep growing and growing and growing. You know, the business doesn't work by you hit on one thing you do well and you just sit there and keep doing it. So hopefully Microsoft won't get into doing things like making furniture or building cars and stuff. I mean, at least the stuff they're doing sort of is of a theme, you know, there's a software element. To everything that they do, I think. So I would say that the software plus services stuff, you know, the types of things that they were talking about at Mix, yes. I mean, sure, it's extending what they're doing into new markets or into new areas, adapting to new technologies, new trends and all that. But that's, of course, what they should be doing. And arguably, they should have done it sooner. So it seems like they're really going at it now in a way that's should be terrifying to other people.
Steve Gilmore said it looked like a battle group with giant aircraft carriers that turn very slowly. But once they start aiming at you, you better watch out because here they come and there's nothing that can stop them. And I think that's pretty apt. That kind of describes the Microsoft experience. Once they've got you in their sights.
They may not adapt quickly, but eventually that thing will turn around. And
do you feel positive about that? I mean, do you feel like they are on the right track?
Yeah, I mean, I see encouraging signs everywhere. You know, Internet Explorer 8 standards mode, that never, ever, ever would have happened 5-10 years ago.
Yeah,
ever.
Very encouraging.
Inconceivable. And I, by the way, I look at Ray Ozzie and I would have to point him out as the reason for all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Silverlight 2 is amazing to me because it really kind of passes the test of time, which is, you know, you see these demos and you get really excited and you've been to these technology events. You know how you can get pumped up about something and then you go home and nothing works.
That's what it looked like from a distance. It looked like it was another one of those Microsoft promises. No, will they deliver?
No, this is real. And that's impressive to me. I mean, I was completely ambivalent about Silverlight version 1. Couldn't care less. Silverlight 2 is exciting. It's a big deal.
Flash comes on every computer, and that's one of the reasons for the ubiquity of Flash on YouTube and everywhere. It comes with a Mac. It comes with every browser. It comes with Windows. Will Silverlight have that same kind of ubiquity?
I don't know.
See, that's the key, isn't it? I mean, if people have to download it.
Well, it will come on Windows eventually.
Then it's real player.
Yeah. But we're talking 2 years down the road. I mean, one thing they said was, you know, they have over 1 million people a day downloading Silverlight every single day.
That's quite a few.
That's amazing.
Is it because there are sites out there that are using and requiring?
Yeah, and actually, the biggest one that is using it is Microsoft's site. And if you browse around Microsoft's site at all, go to Microsoft.com/downloads, or just, I think, even to the homepage. It happens on MSDN. You'll get this little pop-up in the middle of the screen that says, hey,
you need Silverlight.
This site looks way better in Silverlight. You know, and they do these interactive effects and all that stuff. And,
so again, this is not a move towards openness. This is a move toward a proprietary Microsoft web. I mean, on the one hand, they give with IE8, and the other hand, they taketh.
Okay. No, I don't think of it that way. You have to remember that one of the beauties of .NET, and this is something that maybe can come up in the context of a future conversation about the iPhone SDK, for example, is you're not tied into a single programming language, and you're certainly not even tied into Microsoft programming languages. There are dozens and dozens of languages now that work within the .NET environment. You can, if you happen to be good at PHP or JavaScript or
whatever. In fact, whatever the Linux port of Silverlight is Mono.
That's the environment. Right. So, in other words, on Linux, conceivably, I don't know a lot about this, but conceivably, you could be doing PHP stuff under Mono.
It's an open source implementation of Silverlight, as far as I can understand, because Silverlight is .NET.
Right.
And Mono is the open source version of .NET on Linux. So I guess, I'll give them some credit for that. It seems like...
I think it's interesting. I still have a foot in the door, with the developer world. I'm not a true developer, but... I do boot up Visual Studio every single day.
Really?
Not just to look at it.
What do you do with it?
I use the code editor to work on my site.
Oh, I didn't know that. So, and you make a good point that there are a lot of .NET developers out of there, and they know how to write for this stuff.
Yep.
So is the media player capability of Silverlight still there? They just added this layer to allow it more.
Yeah, no, that stuff's still there. And that was the big deal. I know that Adobe had been working on some advanced version of Flash, and I think they just released it, the Air stuff that they were doing. This is sort of their answer to Silverlight.
Air 1 is now
So when Microsoft came out with Silverlight 1.0, basically offering near HD quality video streaming over the web, Adobe had to make an update to Flash because Flash video was very constrained from a resolution standpoint until that point. So they did a quick update to sort of, bump it up to Silverlight type capabilities. But yeah, these two, I think they're going to be going head to head in a lot of different markets going forward. And I guess we'll see. Adobe obviously has awesome market share. There's certainly a lot of frustration out there with Flash, both from a user standpoint and from a developer standpoint. But
it's everywhere you want to be.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see what happens.
Does Silverlight support H.264, or is it its own video? That was the thing that Adobe did that opened up Flash a little bit.
Right. Well, and that was, and that had sort of ramifications, I think, for YouTube, didn't it? Because
sure did.
All of a sudden have high quality.
Sure did.
I'm not sure with Silverlight. I wouldn't be. I'm going to guess and say it almost certainly does, but I actually don't know.
It's something they could do, certainly, if they haven't done it.
See, I wasn't just kidding when I said I was ambivalent about it.
I'm ambivalent. I have the same exact reaction. Of course, the initial reaction is, wow, that's great. How do I get that on my website? But then the secondary reaction is, it's another plugin. It'll come with Windows. It's automatic. So does Windows Media Player. Doesn't make it a standard. Doesn't even make it a good idea. It just, makes it a lot of users.
Well, I'm telling you, I think what's going to push Silverlight for a lot of people is going to be the Olympics this year. And I believe the website is nbcolympics.com.
That's a very important deal for Microsoft.
The stuff they're doing, and if you can watch the video from the Ray Ozzie keynote, look at the Silverlight stuff. They had the Hard Rock demo up there, like you were talking about, and also the Olympics one, and probably some others. But those two really stood out as just massively impressive, just incredible technology demos. Really, really neat sites.
So, there's two stages to this. Of course, sites have to adopt it, and that gives users incentive to download it, and users have to agree and download it.
It is super quick, though.
It is. I did it. In fact, I downloaded Silverlight 1, and then it required Silverlight 2 for the Hard Rock demo, so I downloaded it on the Mac. And they say it's a little buggy on the Mac, Silverlight 2, it worked fine.
There you go.
So I was very, and it was impressive. Let's face it, it's a demo.
Yes,
it's and that, I guess that's the thing. Is this going to be compelling enough to get users to go out and download it.
Well, the Olympics this summer is going to be the real thing. So this was a big announcement they had made last year. You know, NBC has signed on. They're going to use Silverlight for the Olympics. This is, you know, millions and millions of people are going to use this. It's a big deal.
How did Microsoft get that deal? Do you think they paid NBC to do that?
I assume Microsoft pays everybody to get them to use their technology.
That's the kind of big deal you need to kickstart this thing.
Yeah.
You know, you need a Disney, you need an NBC, you need some big media company.
Yes.
Or you need a new.
It has to be capable of doing what you want to do, and clearly Silverlight is capable. So you know that's one thing. I mean,
but you could be pretty sure Google isn't going to run out, and or maybe they will. Will Google do Silverlight? Will YouTube support Silverlight?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's not the same kind of all Microsoft world it once was, and there's more heterogeneous community.
Okay, but I also think there's going to, in some ways, this isn't all that different, is it? I mean, you know, there's going to be Microsoft and their group of partners, and then there's going to be a bunch of other big companies who kind of align themselves together. It wouldn't surprise me to see Adobe and Google aligning themselves.
Well, they are ad hoc.
Yeah, they have a common enemy. What the heck? You know?
Right.
That's how business works. So
that's a change from the days when Microsoft could unilaterally say, okay, the next standard is, and just do it.
Right.
And so that's, I guess, my question. I mean, I'm not questioning the technical merits of Silverlight in the least. I mean, it looks good. It makes sense. It's .NET, you know.
I'm just so not interested in defending this. I just don't know.
I'm not asking you to defend it. I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just curious what you think.
If I could sum this up, I guess that what I would say is, I was really ambivalent about the first version of Silverlight, so I really wasn't expecting much out of this. I was blown away, but I know from experience that I need to give this some time. So I walked away, I read some stuff on the plan they gave, you know, they had some technical information about it. I came back, I looked at some stuff today, even today I was looking at Silverlight stuff. I got to tell you, you know, it really feels like this is real. And I can't believe I'm saying that. I know it's a browser plugin. It sounds crazy. I probably did. We could probably go back. If I ever mentioned Silverlight on this podcast a year ago, I guarantee you I must have made fun of it.
Well, and that maybe that's the source of my confusion, because it seems like it came out of nowhere. I mean, I knew it was around, but all of a sudden...
Well, you got to remember, though, Silverlight 2.0 is a completely different animal than the first one. That's the big thing. The first one was just about video. You know, it was like, let's get this thing out the door.
On those grounds, it was a big ho-hum. It solved a problem that didn't need to be solved.
Yeah. I think they just wanted to get it out there.
Right. I mean, it was like, hey, we got a Flash too. And okay, great. Thanks.
Well, it's like Soapbox. You know, like, we have a video sharing site too.
Right.
You know, nobody uses it, but we have one.
The Silverlight 2 is very different.
Yes.
And I guess that's the thing. And
it was no .NET element.
Right.
You know, it was not a web-hosted version of the .NET environment in the first version.
And I'm sure it was on the roadmap, and I just didn't notice it. But
it was. You're right. But when you talk about things like that theoretically, a year ago, who cares?
Right.
You know, we're going to do big stuff a year from now. You just wait. You know, that sounds really exciting. But obviously what we're concerned about is what we have now.
Well, and Mike, I mean, no company's more famous for over-promising and under-delivering than Microsoft.
Look over here.
I mean, look at Vista, look at Surface. I mean, they're classic. It's almost, you know, it's kind of interesting because you contrast this now. I am the Apple bigot, so yell at me, folks. I'm bringing this up. But you contrast this with Apple, which doesn't say anything until it's got something to ship. And then it announces it. Whereas Microsoft seems like they pre-announce everything.
Okay. You're right. But I would just point out, too, that as we discussed previously, Microsoft is an enormous company. It has thousands of enterprise customers, huge companies
they
that depend on them.
They need to give them a heads up.
This is a company that has to really telegraph what it's doing.
Right. Good point.
That's why it does that. Yeah. They want roadmaps. You know, on the server side, Microsoft went to this staggered rollout where, you know, every 4 years they're going to have a major version of Windows Server, and then those two-year periods in between, they're going to have a minor R2 release. Well, they didn't just do that for the heck of it because maybe they're a little bit anal retentive or something. I mean, this is something that their customers basically demanded. We need to know what you're doing. And obviously on the desktop stuff, that's a little harder. You'll notice, by the way, they don't telegraph what they're doing with the Xbox.
Oh, good point.
You know, so
or the Zoom.
I just think it's the market.
Yeah. So. No, okay. Point well taken. You shut me up. You're absolutely right.
No. I wanted
you
to.
I was asking you why, and then you. It's a very good reason why.
No, and by the way, not playing to the enterprise crowd, which is what Apple has done until very recently, has always played to their strengths because they can be secretive, and then they come out with these big announcements. Right. It's very exciting.
Look at this Exchange. All of a sudden, Microsoft's supporting Exchange. They're using ActiveSync. Nobody. I mean, you could ask me 2 days ago, is Apple going to do that? And I would have said, oh, come on.
Sure. Well, they want to sell 10 million iPhones in the first year. One great way to do that is to open it up to the people who are actually buying cell phones in huge numbers, or smartphones, I should say. And that's the enterprise.
Yep. And meanwhile, stick it to BlackBerry big time.
Yeah. And Windows Mobile, by the way. So, Microsoft, they used to call this kind of thing, this is awful, but it was sort of like knifing the baby. And this is the, this came out of some internal Microsoft emails from Windows 95 timeframe, but basically what it amounts to is they make very callous business decisions of their business because overall it makes sense. So,
sometimes
for example,
you have to.
Yeah, in Windows 95, they wanted MSN on the desktop, but they had complaints from guys like, now I forget who was playing
with AOL. Who complained.
AOL, Delphi, Delphi, if they were still around, Genie, I don't know, whoever was out there.
We've just taken a tour down memory lane and defunct online services.
they could get those guys in the desktop,
right?
And get rid of the complaints.
Right. No, I think knifing the baby, as an infelicitous as a phrase that is something that Microsoft needs to do more of.
Well, actually, see, I think they do it a lot. So one of the ways that they're doing it is that they'll license ActiveSync to anybody. So, like I said, even though Microsoft may want you to have, Exchange in the back end, Windows in the desktop, Windows Mobile on your phone, the truth is, if they have to give up one of those and you're using an iPhone or a BlackBerry or whatever, and they can license ActiveSync and have you using Exchange. Well, at least you're using Exchange.
Yes. And they make more money on Exchange, probably.
Yeah, and that was the decision.
Yeah. Now, that makes sense. And, now...
They're not going to walk away from money.
Yeah. So as difficult strategically as it is to give Apple ActiveSync, as it must be. I mean, the Windows Mobile guys must... And this is, I guess, the other difficulty Microsoft has is when you get this big, you have a lot of fiefdoms.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys who want to protect their turf, and you got to think the Windows Mobile guys are just furious.
Hey, I have one very callous thing myself to say about the Windows Mobile guys, which is screw them. Because
you sound like Steve Ballmer.
No offense, but seriously, listen.
You brought it on yourselves, guys.
Yeah, no offense, but you guys have had. I was there for the first version of Windows CE, Pegasus, I think it was called, and I have watched as they have mismanaged this smartphone market from day one. It is always lagged behind. It's not always been Microsoft's fault. I mean, I understand that part of it is just the nature of the business. But, Apple revolutionized the smartphone business, not just with the hardware and the software, but also with the way that they're now presenting this stuff to users and updating the system over time, providing new functionality. This is something that doesn't happen on other smartphones. And it's the type of thing where I can go to a Microsoft event and they could announce a new version of Windows Mobile. And that thing, I won't see it in a store for another, 18 months.
Right.
That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, that was my point, I guess.
Yeah. Screw them. I would love to, if a Windows Mobile device was better than an iPhone, I would use it.
Yeah.
So you'll have to show me that device. You'll have to show it to me. I don't believe it exists.
No, I if you use Windows, you want Windows Mobile to work. That's, you're hoping to have a unified platform.
Windows Mobile was fun. In the pre-iPhone world, Windows Mobile was fine, I guess. It was a lot like the other stuff.
Yeah. There was no worse than anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked fine with my Microsoft stuff. And in my case, I had the high-speed connection through Verizon, which was wonderful and all that stuff. But, the iPhone, on a number of levels, is a completely different kind of device. And you'll watch over the next 2, 3, 4, whatever versions of Windows Mobile as Microsoft responds to that. And I'm not interested in following technology. In copying it, I think it's more interesting to be there with the people who are innovating.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
All right, let's. I want to mention our Audible pick because you have a book pick for us, and I know you have a tip. And thanks to Russ Traeger, and I know you have some software for us. But I do have to mention that Sir Paul McCartney.
Oh yes.
Has finally come forward and promised what?
Publicly. That in the coming months.
Someday.
That he will release, finally, that it's all ready to go.
Is it
all
up to him?
Yep. Apparently. I guess I know it's this probably in a
Yoko has something to say, I'm sure.
And yeah, the estate of everybody. But yeah. I think it was, I don't know what the holdup has been. I know that the work was done. You know, George Martin spoke last year about this.
Right.
They remastered everything. And he's basically saying that once his divorce hearing is over in the next 10 days or so, sometime in the next few months.
We're waiting till his divorce hearing is over? We're waiting till his divorce hearing is over? That's the holdup.
I think he's trying to settle this before he releases the Beatles, so that isn't part of what she gets.
That witch doesn't get his mask. Well, you got to think it'll be a windfall for the Beatles, because after all, I mean, even though I've probably at some time or other bought every Beatles album, probably more than once, I'll probably go out and buy. You know, if they make a complete set as they did for Led Zeppelin, a $99 buy them all. You bet I'll buy them all.
Yes.
Why not?
Yep.
So it'll be a lot of people. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of kids love the Beatles and don't have those songs. My kids can't wait.
There's a lot of music from the 60s. This kind of blows my mind that, you know, still sounds amazingly, I don't know, modern. It still resonates. You know,
I agree.
It doesn't feel dated. I don't know how to explain it. It's amazing.
Well, because we were the greatest generation.
Well, I wasn't, but
I was. No, I'm just kidding. Let's talk a little bit about Audible, then we'll get your tips and your software. Of course, Audible is our sponsor, and we love having them on board. They do great audio books. They don't play on the Zune. I got to tell you, Zune users, all 12 of you, no Audible for you. But it does play on pretty much everything else, and it does play on the Kindle, and of course, all the iPods and the iPhone, and you can even burn CDs. The idea is you pick a book, and there are tens of thousands of great titles to choose from. You download it, and you could put it on a portable device. You could burn a CD. You can listen on your computer. And this is really all my reading now is done on audiobooks from audible.com, audible.com. Paul, like me, is a big Audible reader or listener, depending on how you like to term it. What have you been listening to lately?
So I actually just got this, but I didn't realize it, but there's a movie out now about this, and I read an article about the guy, and it's called Charlie Wilson's War.
I did not like the movie, but I hear the book is great.
Yeah, I did too. So I'm not going to see the movie.
Read the book. The movie was very disappointing, I think.
Yeah, so there's an unabridged version of it on Audible, so I snagged that. And it's supposed to be fantastic. It's the story is basically about how a rogue CIA agent, collaborated with the Afghan, you know, freedom fighters to fight the Soviet Union in the early 1980s. So it's kind of, you know, of course, and given the way history has gone since then, it's, even more relevant in some ways.
The movie was entertaining. It kind of had I didn't have a great ending, but this is an Audi Award winner, a great book. I'm so glad they have it, The Unabridged now, from Blackstone Audio.
Didn't even realize it was a movie. In the article about the guy, who I believe is still alive,
he was a congressman. Years old.
Yeah,
yeah.
They mentioned that the movie, and I'm so out of touch with mainstream media.
It was a Tom Hanks movie, and Philip Seymour Hoffman was the CIA guy, and they were good. I think it was probably not a great script. It wasn't their fault, but I cannot wait to read the book. I didn't realize it was on Audible. Yep. So that's a great pick. I'm looking forward to that. Charlie Wilson's War, the extraordinary story of the largest covert operation in history by George Creel. Mm-hmm. And you can get it as your Audible pick. Now this is the good deal. This is the way we do this. This is how we roll here. All you got to do is go to audible.com/windows. You can sign up for Audible today and get a credit for this book absolutely free. Will cost you nothing. And that's saving you some money. Let's see. This is normally $35. I tell you, you're going to love this. Audible has so many great books, 45,000 titles, easy to download, easy to listen to. Read your way through life without, you know, having to pick up a book. You can drive, you can work out. I love them. Audible.com/windows. We thank them for their support. So time for your tip.
All righty. Well, this is for the highly organized in the audience. I don't believe we've mentioned this one on the podcast before, but this was true of XP. So actually, if you're still using XP, this will work equally well on XP as it does on Vista. But one of the things many people don't understand, and it is really confusing, is that the start menu, what you see in the start menu, is actually an aggregate view of two different folders.
Yeah.
And what it does is it, you know, it consolidates the contents of both of those folders into a single, you know, what looks like a single, you know, view inside of the start menu. So obviously in the Vista start menu, it's sort of constrained within the start menu, and on the XP version, it cascades out. But all those things that you see, all those icons, the shortcuts, they're actually spread out over two different locations. So if you want to do something like if you want to be highly organized, and this is something I used to do on XP, I actually don't do this anymore on Vista. Mostly because of start menu search, but I could see where people would still want to do this. Is you might want to organize things. So maybe you'll have folders, you know, for things like internet, accessories, you know, programming, you know, whatever it might be that you're doing. And just put the shortcuts in there that you need and just get rid of everything else. So instead of this humongous start menu, you have a very small one with just the structure that you want. The problem is if you try to do it from just one of the folders, it's not going to work because, like I said, everything is spread out among the two different locations. So the way to find the two locations is you right-click on the Start button, and you can choose Open, and that will give the location that's under your user profile. So these are the shortcuts that are specific to the user that is currently logged onto the machine. But you can also right-click on the Start button and choose Open All Users, and that will give you the version that's in Vista, it's on the, I guess it's the all. Let me look at it, make sure I get the name right, because this is one of those things that changed between Vista and XP. So on Vista, it's the public folder, the stuff that appears for everybody, the stuff that's available to everybody. On XP, it was all users, you know. So basically, the contents of both of these are aggregated together. So you'll see a programs folder in each location, but then you might have one or more other icons next to programs, you know, in the same level as programs. So as you dive in, you'll see all the subfolders that you'll recognize from your start menu. And depending on how many things you've installed, obviously there could be a huge number of subfolders in there. So basically you can just go in there and mix and match and you know, delete things and so forth. Unfortunately, I will warn you that on Vista, you get a lot of user account control prompting. So if you're going to really kind of get in there for a heavy duty session of editing, so you might want to, you know, temporarily turn off user account control just for this one purpose and then make sure you turn it back on when you're done. But this is a handy way to do this. And one of the tips I think we had used previous was how you can organize windows on screen. You know, one of the things you can do is control click those two things, the two folders that you've opened, the one for the current folder and the one for all users. Control click those in the start, task. I'm losing my mind here, in the taskbar, and then right-click, and you can show the window side by side, and that will let you drag them.
Oh, that's
back
a good idea. You know, just like you, I used to do this in XP all the time.
Yeah.
And I just don't, with Vista, because you can just type the first few letters, I don't even pay attention.
That's what's happened. So, So, and again, you know, the start menu search thing is so cool.
It's just, you don't need
it. In some
it
ways, so that stuff's buried in there, but it doesn't matter.
Because I didn't really understand how Vista had done it, so that was less incentive to do it. Oh, I used to. That's how the first thing I'd do on XP is I'd create, you know, an internet folder and a games folder.
Well, because, you know, in XP you're presented with this huge pop-up window thing, and it's just the more stuff you have installed, the uglier it gets, and it's all over the place. It's a mess. So this was always a big deal. So I suspect a lot of people are still using XP anyway, so that's fine. But
even
under Vista, I mean, there are people going to want to do this. So.
Absolutely. Very useful tip. And I guess Russ Traeger, who's a listener and a friend, asked you for help with this.
Yeah. And it occurred to me this would be a great one.
Thank you, Russ.
Actually, it might have occurred to him. I think maybe he suggested it, I should say. So,
and then it occurred to you that he was right.
It occurred to me that he was correct. Yes.
So. And we have a software tip, too. This is great.
Yeah, the two things this week. One is just for the people who are using Google Calendar, and those have been following my travails with you know, syncing between Google Calendar and the iPhone specifically. Google has now released a Google Calendar sync tool for syncing Google Calendar to Microsoft Outlook. And, you know, like a lot of these Google Calendar sync type things, it's a little bit constrained. It only works with the primary Google Calendar. So if you have sub calendars, it doesn't work with those. And I'm still experimenting with it because I need to see how it works with, you know, obviously in Outlook, you can also have different calendars as well. So, but as far as, because of the way I use Google Calendar and the iPhone, and I've been syncing with Outlook using a third party tool, I've actually simplified everything. So I'm just using the primary calendar in both anyway. This works just as well as what I was using, but now this is coming directly from Google Calendar, so, or from Google, I should say. So to get it, just go to Google Calendar, google.com/calendar. You'll see a red link up in the top right. Click here, you know, click the link, sync with Microsoft Outlook Calendar.
That's great.
So yeah, it's a neat tool.
I actually,
so that's for people.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, that's a certain subset of people who might need that. I mean, it's useful to have.
I sync the other, and I love it. I sync directly with my BlackBerry with Google. If you go to, I think it's m.google.com/BlackBerry. It's an over-the-air install. And then what's nice is when I change something on my BlackBerry, it automatically changes it on my Google Calendar and vice versa.
All right, you realize, I mean, now that the iPhone SDK is out, iPhone users will
soon have the same thing. Sure. Yeah. It's nice to have over-the-air syncing as opposed to when I get home, I sync with Outlook and now I'm up to date because your calendars are always up to date.
The problem is I sync on my desktop. I will sync before a trip.
Right.
I go off on the road,
and then
maybe
you
my calendar changes. There's no way for me to sync. I can obviously access Google Calendar on the web from like the iPhone or whatever, but
that's what makes Google Calendar really useful, because now you have web access to it everywhere, which you always had. But any change you make now appears immediately on your phone, so that my phone always, you know, when I changed, for instance, we changed the schedule for this. I only changed it in Google Calendar, but now it's on my BlackBerry as well.
Right, so we change. So that's an interesting. that's a good one to use, and a good example, because
we changed that when you were on the road.
Right, so I assure you, if I were to bring up my iPhone right now, it would still say Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern for me, because I haven't changed it at all, and we've changed it twice.
It's a really this is a really handle, and it's been so handy that it's actually moved me to use Google Calendar exclusively for my calendar. I don't use a desktop application anymore.
Right. I do the same thing. Yeah. In fact, I only use Outlook to sync with the iPhone. If they did that over the air sync, I would not be using Outlook at all. Well,
I think hit the nail on the head. That's just something that as soon as they get their hands on the SDK, they'll be doing, I'm sure.
This is I heard about this when I was in Vegas, installed it on my laptop. It's got kind of a cool Vista feel to it. I honestly feel that the more technical people out there aren't going to be too interested in this. However, I suspect that you're all going to want to install it on the PCs of all of your family members that come to you for support. And I think it's a cool idea. And it's called Haute Secure. It's Haute, secure.com. And it's basically software that plugs into your browser. And it basically just protects the browser from web-based malware, specifically that which is designed to steal personal information. It's a really small company. It was founded mostly by a bunch of ex-Microsoft security guys. And it looks like a neat security solution, and it's free.
Wow, this is fantastic!
And, yeah, I think you want to check this one out. I could see.
I install it just so I don't get bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering. You know, I have it only on the laptop right now. I'm going to install it on my desktop this weekend. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it might be the type of thing that for me, I may not actually want it personally, but I do recognize that this is the type of thing I'm going to want to put in my parents' computer, my son's computer, my wife's computer, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, looks like an important thing, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Microsoft purchase these guys or somebody big.
Well, that must be the plan, because I can't think of any other way they can make money. They don't charge for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is this Internet Explorer on Windows only?
You know, I don't know that.
It looks like they have Firefox compatibility. They have Windows 64 compatibility, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But they also say that there is a list that you should check before you download to see if there are some issues. Apparently, sometimes you'll have some issues with some limited software, but not Firefox, which is nice. I'm impressed.
Yeah, no, it looks good.
I wonder, I'm going to just try to install it on my Mac. No, it's an EXE.
Well, you'll have to. Yeah, no, it's not going to work that way. It does require a reboot.
Yeah.
It actually, I do. I'm sorry. It does. It puts a toolbar in Firefox. That's how I had it on the,
yeah.
On the
Mac.
And
so it's not IE at all, or?
No, it's not IE specific.
It's a Firefox extension.
Yeah, with various browsers.
Oh, with various browsers. Okay. Well, you survived for a long hour, but now you're coughing, so I think I'm going to let you go. Are you there?
Hello?
I didn't mean to let you go that quickly. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Hello.
I think when you coughed, you hit the mute button.
Actually, I tried to hit the mute button and then cough, and I think I might have.
I think you did it the other way around.
I'm so sorry.
You coughed, and then you hit the mute button, muting yourself. You were doing so. I was saying, "Oh, you're doing so well." You're coughing. I think I better let you go. And then silence.
Complete silence.
You left. Well, hey, great stuff. I really appreciate it. Very good tips. I think the conversation on Mix fascinating. I think we better adjourn so you can get well, and we'll talk again next Thursday. We'll be back on schedule for next week, unless you're doing any traveling.
No.
Nowhere.
I'm going to stay home for a while.
He's not going anywhere. He's going to.
No, the other thing is, you know, I'm working on the revision to Windows Secrets, so I have, a couple of months, basically, so I think probably not too much traveling during that time.
Good. I like hearing it. Well, take care of yourself, feel better, and stay out of the snow, and we will talk again next week on Windows Weekly.